Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Kicking off Super Bowl week here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the Canty and Golic Jr. Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, the Cincinnati Bengals have made their way out to Southern California. Of course, we got both teams at the Super Bowl site with the LA Rams hosting at SoFi Stadium. And so opening night ceremonies, everybody's starting to get excited. Everybody's starting to break down the matchup now that Super Bowl week is here. And that begs the question of the road that the Cincinnati Bengals traveled in order to get here. And I feel like, maybe this is just me, there's a lot of shade toward this Cincinnati Bengals team. I know a lot of folks are giving Joe Burrow his props. They're talking about his swag. They're talking about his sauce, and that's all well and good. But I feel like when you look at this matchup and then you look at what the Vegas odds makers have this line at, there's a little disrespect coming toward the Cincinnati Bengals. Is that just me, or do you see that as well?
Oh, no, Chris. I mean, we very clearly made this Joe Burrow and the Pips now, right? Like, we don't talk anything about the rest of that team. That includes Ja'Marr Chase, the likely NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, Trey Hendrickson in the defense, who we said in an honest moment, looking back at their win against the Kansas City Chiefs, were the markedly bigger story in all of this. So, yeah, Chris, that's indicated by Vegas, too. They're a 4.5-point dog currently, which, as you pointed out, was the exact line and the exact favorite amount for the New England Patriots in that Super Bowl loss to the Philadelphia Eagles back in 2017. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, that was a team that was marching out their backup quarterback in Nick Foles, and they lost an MVP frontrunner in Carson Wentz. Not a lot of people were giving the Eagles a shot in that game, but we saw what the outcome ultimately ended up being, and it feels like that same magic carpet ride for the Cincinnati Bengals with Joe Burrow. A lot of people not respecting them, but credit to the Bengals and everybody in that locker room, including Joe Burrow, that says that they belong here. They believe in themselves. Like, they have the confidence to go out there and not only compete and make it a game, but to actually win it. And the thing that I would say, Gojo, when they start to express that confidence, look at what they did to the Kansas City Chiefs. In the past, what, month? You're talking about them beating the Chiefs not once but twice and going into conference championship week. The Kansas City Chiefs were the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl, so whatever they're going to see from the Los Angeles Rams, especially on the offensive side of the ball, it isn't greater or isn't markedly better than what they saw in the Kansas City Chiefs offense. So I would just say, from a respect standpoint, look at what the Cincinnati Bengals did to the Kansas City Chiefs. That wasn't a fluke. They beat that team twice in 2022. And there's something to be said for that in terms of the quality of the ball club that they're taking into SoFi Stadium, into the Super Bowl 56 matchup.
One person, surprise, surprise, that is not short on belief in the Cincinnati Bengals is our very own Jordan Cornette, the co-host of Game Day on ESPN Radio and Sports Nation on ESPN Plus, had this to say about his Bengals heading into the Super Bowl.
What it comes down to is you don't have to be the best team in the league during a regular season. You've got to be playing your best football right now. It's much like in March Madness in college basketball. These sports aren't much different. The best team in college basketball doesn't always put it together and win in the tournament. It's just they're playing the right type of game at the right time. You'd be a fool to bet against these Bengals at this point, Shay. They keep turning around and shocking the world. It doesn't matter if their offensive line gives up 9 sacks in a game. It doesn't matter if they're playing on the road in Arrowhead and now in SoFi because the Rams are hosting in that game. Sometimes you're just that team, and nobody wants to jump off the hot squad. That's the Bengals.
Canty and Golic Jr. here, and what's happening next is brought to you by Body Armor Light Sports Drink. And, Chris, you mentioned it. The Kansas City Chiefs were the odds-on favorite. They have been beaten twice by this team. Jordan's absolutely right. They're rolling in hotter than anything that we can remember in recent memory. But this is always, when we look at these things, about matchups as well. And one of the things we talked about with the Chiefs, Chris, so much of that game was their pass rush failed to capitalize on a major strength on weakness there against the Bengals' offensive line. You throw it back to that game in the divisional round against number one ranked Tennessee. While their defense won big, we know their offense turned the ball over early and often in that game and couldn't do that. This is a much more balanced Rams team. Like, Chris, if I'm going to argue for the Rams, a team that I'm feeling pretty good about picking going into this game, it's because they combine the best of both worlds with that. And so far, we've seen the Bengals able to overcome one it's going to be interesting if they can overcome both if Matthew Stafford continues to play consistently on offense.
Yeah, but here's the thing with Matthew Stafford. I'm not sure he's going to be able to continue to keep it together in the way of not turning the football over. Lest we not forget, at the beginning of the fourth quarter in the NFC Championship game, he throws a gimme to Quayshon Tart, and Tart just drops the ball. If he makes that interception, you're talking about the complexion of that fourth quarter being different, and the Rams probably finding themselves on the losing side of it. So I don't know that Matthew Stafford is completely past it, but to drive home the point that our very own Jordan Cornette was making about playing your best ball and not necessarily having to have the best collection of talent, Bill Parcells had a sign in his office that said, the best players don't always make the best team, but the best team always wins. It feels like this Bengals team is playing out in front of their skis in terms of when you look at the individual pieces and the sum being greater than the parts. It feels a lot like that going into this matchup. And what I would say is, even though the LA Rams have a ton of star power, I think I have a little more confidence in the way that this Bengals team is playing collectively as opposed to what we're seeing from the LA Rams, because you're talking about them having to come from behind in the fourth quarter against a team that is winning in spite of their quarterback and Jimmy Garoppolo, not because of him. You're talking about blowing out an Arizona Cardinals team who this was their first time in the dance in the rodeo. You're talking about them blowing a huge lead on the road to Tampa only to find some late game magic from Matt Stafford to Cooper Kupp. I'm not saying that you don't have to have the ball bounce your way in a lot of playoff games and pivotal moments, because you do, but just looking at the body of work, I feel a lot more confident in how this Cincinnati Bengals team is playing. You're talking about them, Gojo, winning six straight games that they've played their starters in comparison to what we've seen from the LA Rams, who kind of was mixed results down the stretch in the end of the regular season. So I feel better about where the Bengals are at as a team. Not saying that they're more talented than the Rams, because I don't think that's the case. But in terms of them playing football, in terms of them being able to mask the deficiencies by being really sound, I think that's the reason why I lean in that direction at the start of Super Bowl week. Now, all of this is subject to change. We'll see how it all plays out. But that's the direction that I would lean, and that's why I feel like folks are disrespecting the Cincinnati Bengals, especially with that 4.5-point line. I feel like that's way too much, even though the Rams are hosting the Super Bowl in their home stadium.
I'll say this. If the conversation's disrespect, I was the first to raise my hand going into the AFC Championship game and say I doubted that team and the 7 points that they were getting in help from the folks in Vegas in that game. I won't make that mistake again, Chris. I'm thinking at this point I'm picking the Los Angeles Rams to win this game straight up, but what I'm not going to do is assume that this Bengals team is ever going to be out of it, that this is going to be anything other than a game between two very good teams, and right now the two teams that are left and have the ability to say they're the best in the NFL at this point.
Now, well, listen, man, you're talking about in the last 8 games only having one team score over 30 on that defense, and that was the first time that the Cincinnati Bengals played the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'm anticipating that Bengals defense is going to keep this game relatively close. This is not going to be a track meet with both offenses up and down the field. I just don't foresee that. I think this is going to be a closely contested game, and it's going to come down to your playmakers being able to show up in pivotal moments. And, you know, I think both teams have no shortage of guys that could be those playmakers. You look at Cooper Kupp, there's an argument to be made. He's the best wide receiver in the National Football League. Aaron Donald, the best defensive player in the National Football League. Jalen Ramsey, the best corner. So, I mean, there are a lot of – I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, arguably one of the best skill position players in the National Football League. Joe Burrow. I mean, there's no shortage of guys that can put their imprint on this game and be the difference as to why their team wins this game. So – it'll be exciting. It'll be close. I think it is real disrespectful to give a team more than a field goal favorite going into this matchup, because I do think these teams are evenly matched.
Jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 is where you can get at us on the Canty and Golic Jr. hotline. Coming up next, though, how much does the rest of this season and what happens have to reflect on Kevin Durant and the way he's perceived going forward? We'll let you know what Stephen A. Smith had to say on that and the reply that we've already seen next on ESPN Radio.
It's this whole battle between Stephen A. and Kevin Durant. If KD doesn't win this year, then, you know, it falls on him and everybody's going to look at him for leaving Steph for Kyrie.
I kind of agree with Stephen A.
This is ESPN Radio.
It's this whole battle between Stephen A. and Kevin Durant. If KD doesn't win this year, then, you know, it falls on him and everybody's going to look at him for leaving Steph for Kyrie.
I kind of agree with Stephen A., but at the same time, I don't understand why KD even putting any thoughts into what Stephen A. is talking about.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. And Mike, to say that there's a problem in Brooklyn would be the understatement of 2022. Clearly things aren't right. And with the questions that continue to be asked and some of the cryptic answers that we're getting from Steve Nash, from Kyrie Irving and others, it just leads you to believe that this Brooklyn Big Three experiment is almost over. Now, I know that Steve Nash and Sean Marks have said that they're not trading James Harden, but that's not necessarily what we're getting in terms of the vibes from James Harden, nor does it sound like that's what we're hearing from Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant is taking a lot of heat, a lot of criticism, because he's the one that essentially orchestrated the Big Three being constructed in Brooklyn over the course of the last two seasons. And so our very own Stephen A. Smith had the criticism over the course of the weekend, saying that a lot of people would point to Kevin Durant and this being a criticism of him if they're not able to figure out a way to win a championship with him being surrounded with this supporting cast. I got to say this, Gojo, I kind of agree with Stephen A. Smith and where he's coming from on this one.
Yeah, this was Stephen A. Smith on NBA Countdown. Getting into that, how we're going to view this situation through the prism of KD's career.
There's going to be people, especially if Golden State wins and Brooklyn doesn't win, with all of this stuff that went on this year, that is going to look at his choice to join with Kyrie Irving and depart from Steph Curry as opposed to staying with Steph Curry. That's all I'm saying. I ain't saying it's fair. I'm not saying it's right. When KD tweeted and said it was egregious for me to say that on NBA Today with Malika and Shanae is when I said it, I'm saying I tweeted back. You're absolutely right. It is egregious. It's unfair. It ain't right. You deserve better. But since when has that had anything to do with headlines on the back pages?
Now, he mentioned the response from Kevin Durant, who said, "Steve, since you decided to use ESPN to push your personal agendas, I'm sure your minions will run with this story for you. But if you believe that this is my career is defined by that, then you're just a flat-out hater. It's going to be hard to box the God in." Now, I don't know what's weirder, calling himself the God or calling Stephen A. Smith Steve.
Yeah, that seems a little strange. But I will say this, Gojo, a hit dog, a holler. And that's Kevin Durant when he's responding to Stephen A. Smith. So to answer Keyshawn Johnson's question, that's what it is. There's some sensitivity there because Kevin Durant realizes that he left a much better basketball situation with the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green to come over to Brooklyn and start his own thing with Kyrie Irving, who's a mercurial player, who's unreliable, and with James Harden, a guy that hasn't proven the ability to do high-level winning. So he left a better basketball situation in order to build his own legacy with his own team, and it hasn't necessarily worked out. You're talking about the Big Three being together for a calendar year and them only playing in 16 games together. So based on the sample size and based on what that's actually produced, I'm skeptical as to whether or not this Big Three can ever win a championship together. And now they're faced with trying to make a decision on whether or not they should trade James Harden ahead of Thursday's trade deadline, knowing that there's the potential for James Harden, because he didn't sign a contract extension, to leave this offseason in free agency. He's got a player option for 2022-2023 that would pay him $47 million, but I don't know that that's the priority for James Harden when it comes to basketball. I don't know that it's about him making as much money as he can. I think it's about him trying to compete and win a championship, because that's the thing that's missing from his resume that Kyrie and KD already have.
Yeah, the thing I'll say with all this, Chris, is if the central argument is about Kevin Durant, that how this transpires will change the way that we look at him overall legacy-wise, I think that might be a bridge too far in totality, meaning if you thought Kevin Durant was one of the best basketball players that we've ever seen right now, I don't think what happens with this is necessarily going to change that. But if you want to start to vault him into conversations around LeBron James, because when we said he is now vaulted into best player in the league category. That is taking the crown away from LeBron James. So they're going to be connected. That's when all of a sudden this stuff can start to matter a little more, because history is written by the victors. Like, that is the universal truth in how we assess the damage on these things. And Kevin Durant took a risk after getting his wins at Golden State. It was very reminiscent of LeBron James leaving Miami, and the difference is LeBron cashed that one in on the other side, and Kevin Durant right now is still waiting and potentially holding the bag for that. And he does it all, Chris, while responding, while being more available to people on Twitter through social media like this than maybe any other athlete that we associate with this.
Well, here's what I will say. As far as Kevin Durant's greatness is concerned and his overall legacy, Gojo, if he doesn't win a championship with the Brooklyn Nets, if he never wins another championship, I think there will be a lot more separation in terms of how we view him in comparison to LeBron. He'll be a lot closer to Giannis and some of the other players that figure to be prominent over the course of the last, you know, 5 years to the next 5 years, this decade, on both sides of it. I think that's how we're going to see KD. It's not going to be as that guy that was that close to LeBron James. There's still going to be this huge gulf there if he's not able to pull it off and win a chip like LeBron did when he went to Cleveland, knowing that it wasn't necessarily a better basketball infrastructure in Cleveland than what he had in Miami previously. So I think there's a degree of criticism that's going to come along with that. Fans have a hard time reconciling a superstar wanting to do everything it takes to win championships and then leaving a situation that's ready-made to continue to compete for championships for a relative unknown in the Brooklyn Nets. That's a hard leap to make for fans in terms of being able to understand that. And then just to look at some of the potential parallels.
Chris, that depends on which side of that argument you were on in the first place if you were a fan. Because if you were a fan that was critical of him for going and signing with Golden State fresh off that 73-9 season, then you can't in this same vein turn around and be critical of him for leaving. If you were critical then, you're more than welcome to be critical now, but that would be talking out of both sides of your mouth at the fullest.
No, I don't know about that, Gojo. I don't know if I agree with that. I would say this, like, he left OKC and then he cashed and he won championships with Golden State. Nobody liked the way that he did it. But he ultimately left because that was a better basketball situation. Fans could understand that. This is a guy that prioritized winning above all else. But then you decide you're going to leave Golden State to go to the Brooklyn Nets and you don't win a championship? I think that's the part that people have a hard time understanding. Similarly to why people have a hard time understanding why Kyrie says he's committed to winning a championship, but he's not getting vaccinated and therefore being a part-time player with the Brooklyn Nets. That's hard for fans to understand. So I hear where you're coming from with the KD criticism, but I think this is something that you're gonna have to lay at his doorstep, because it's a situation where he left an opportunity to compete for more championships, and based on the core that Golden State has, it's hard to make the claim that that team wouldn't have won any more championships with Kevin Durant still on it, as opposed to what he has right now with a guy in Kyrie Irving that's unreliable to the point where the other superstar, James Harden, has had enough and is frustrated and potentially looking for the door.
Let's look at that core for the Brooklyn Nets. Coming up next, we will talk to one of our great ESPN NBA reporters who has been taking a look at this Harden situation with the Nets and trying to figure out what we can expect as we approach the trade deadline. We will get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Join the conversation on the CNG line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. But Mike, right now, we got to go out to the hotline and bring on ESPN NBA reporter Ramona Shelburne. And Ramona, we're getting a lot of mixed messages coming out of Brooklyn. I know that Steve Nash and Sean Marks are saying that James Harden is untouchable ahead of Thursday's trade deadline, but it doesn't sound like the players are all that confident about James Harden being fully committed. What's the latest that you can give us on the James Harden situation?
Well, look, there's a difference between saying you're fully committed and showing it. And I think, I mean, you've seen the last couple games, right? Mm-hmm. That game in Sacramento. I mean, look, it looked like the James Harden at the end of the Houston run that he had, right? Where he was, you know, 4 points, he didn't shoot well from the field. He had some assists and rebounds, but the defensive lapses and effort were obvious and telling. I mean, there was clips circulating all over the internet with people, you know, saying what's going on here. Then he hasn't played the last two games with a hamstring injury. But there's what's happening on the court, then what's happening behind the scenes, which I think in the reporting Adrian Wojnarowski and I were doing this weekend, it was, you know, James has been talking to other agents and third parties around the league for getting advice on his situation, which is he can be a free agent this summer. He can either do an extension with the Nets. He can be a free agent, sign elsewhere. There's the possibility, you know, there's the trade deadline coming up on Thursday. And when you canvass the league, I mean, James doesn't have an agent. He has a manager. And so this is straight from the same playbook that he did when he got traded from Houston, which is when he hired a couple agents from Wasserman to basically do a trade for him. And then as soon as they got him traded to Brooklyn, that relationship was over. They sort of paid them for their services and they went away and they went along. And so it's like you're going from the same playbook that happened in Houston just a year and a half ago, less than a year and a half ago. But when you meet with the team and your teammates, you're saying, I want to be here. So it's you know, it's mixed signals, to say the least.
Talking to Ramona Shelburne with us here on Canty and Golic Jr. And Ramona, in the report from you and Woj, we saw that Sean Marks, the Nets GM, said flat out no when he was called by Daryl Morey on James Harden about a month ago here. Which side, in your estimation, should be more desperate to get this deal done before the trade deadline?
It's a really good question. That's a really good question. I mean, how do you see the Sixers right now? What do you think? Do you think they can win in the playoffs?
I think they have a chance to win in the playoffs and probably fall short at this point with just Joel Embiid out there as the lone superstar.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do too, right? Like, I kind of think they're overachieving to be as good as they are right now. They're game and a half out of first, but I think they're fifth in the Eastern Conference, but game and a half out. Mm-hmm. Embiid looks like the MVP if he keeps it up and nobody else has a surge or a run or something. But when you get down to the playoffs, like, I don't know that they have enough. I think that it's been a nice story and a nice team this year, but I think there are other teams I would put ahead of them in terms of contenders. Milwaukee, Miami, Brooklyn, if all three of those guys are healthy. And so I think you have to be honest about how much do you feel like you can compete for a championship this year. And there's door number one, which is try to go get Harden now. There's another door that says make a trade at the margins and just improve the team without trading Ben Simmons, who's your most valuable asset. Let that go into the summer. There's another one that says, hey, go past the trade deadline and maybe Ben Simmons will come back. I don't see that one happening, but never say never. You don't know what happens until things play out. But I think for Brooklyn, I actually think a Simmons trade makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's kind of exactly what they need in terms of defensive presence. That's a great situation for him because he doesn't need to score if he goes there. I mean, he'll score 20 a game playing next to Kevin Durant and Kyrie, but he doesn't have to shoot. He doesn't have to score. He can just run the break, create offense, play great defense. There's not a whole lot of pressure on him there. He'd be the third guy there. It's a good situation for him. Although I think the way Ben thinks of himself and he's training right now, the idea for him would be to go to a team that would be built around him and for him, right? He sees himself as, you know, build a team around me like the Bucks built around Giannis. You know, four shooters surrounding him, let him run the break, let him be the engine of your team. So it's an interesting dynamic going on here because I think you can make an argument for both teams that they should do it or they shouldn't do it.
Ramona, staying with the Brooklyn Nets, you outlined three different scenarios for James Harden being traded ahead of Thursday's deadline, being traded this offseason in a sign-and-trade move, or walking away in free agency. Mm-hmm. Which of those three scenarios is the most likely and which is the least likely?
I would say the most likely is that he stays in Brooklyn because I just think big trades are hard to happen. Big trades like this, okay? You know, it's a big move, and Brooklyn just traded for him last year, right? Mm-hmm. And I also think Brooklyn, yeah, you can say that there's a chance they lose him for nothing in the offseason if he wants to leave as a free agent, but that's pretty unrealistic because the teams that have cap space that could sign him as a free agent are not destinations. We're talking Orlando, San Antonio, Indiana. There's not places James Harden's going to go. on a max contract, right? So you really would have to – they would get something for him if he wanted to do a sign-and-trade. Just think about how the Bulls got something for DeMar DeRozan, right? They could have traded him at the deadline last year, but anywhere DeMar was going to go was probably going to be a sign-and-trade, and they would get something in return. So you're not going to lose Harden for nothing. And I think the sense is get those three guys healthy. Durant will be back after the All-Star break. It'll take on some momentum of its own. But there is a possibility over the next 3 days where things can get interesting, right? Deadlines create opportunity. And so, you know, if you would ask me this question 2 weeks ago, I would have said, oh, no, nothing's going to happen there. Now I think, you know, there's a chance, right? There was a chance where I thought 2 weeks ago there would probably be no chance.
Oh, man, it's going to be an exciting rush up to the trade deadline here. We'll all obviously have our eyes honed in on this situation and be waiting to hear everything. Ramona, we appreciate the time and the reporting on this, as always. We'll catch up with you as we get closer to the deadline and talk to you then.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Ramona Shelburne, our ESPN NBA reporter, again, part of that report with Adrian Wojnarowski about the Brooklyn Nets' lack of desire at the moment to move James Harden. Reminder, the NBA trade deadline coming up February 10th. The NBA Today crew going to have that trade deadline special with Ramona and Malik Andrews and all the rest of that crew over there. So we'll be able to have them walk us through all of this as it comes up here. Coming up next, though, one NFL team got very good news about its coaching staff continuity heading into 2022. Or did they? We're not really sure. That's next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
At just 5'10", 225 pounds, Rashad Evans entered the Ultimate Fighter house as a heavyweight. Physically one of the smallest competitors, but perhaps the one with the biggest heart. Evans went on to win the tournament, despite giving up 25 pounds to his final opponent, becoming the first black man to walk out of the tough house with a UFC contract.
ESPN Radio celebrates Black History Always. This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the C&G call-in line, 888-ESPN, 888-729-3776. It's Super Bowl week. And, of course, we got to talk about the Dallas Cowboys because it just feels like it's requisite anytime we're talking about football. And, of course, Super Bowl week, we're getting to the matchup between the Bengals and the Rams. But the Cowboys got a bit of good news over the course of the weekend, Mike, because the Miami Dolphins did hire Mike McDaniel to be their head coach, and Kellen Moore, their Dallas Cowboys offensive coordinator, was the other finalist for that job. So Kellen Moore coming back as the OC for the Cowboys, how fired up should Cowboys fans be that both of their coordinators and their head coach are back in 2022?
Yeah, Chris, all things considered, this is damn good news for the Cowboys, right? Like, based on everything they had on their plate last year and what we thought might have happened. Like, remember when we started the offseason, we said, well, part of the reason you might keep Mike McCarthy around is because you face the prospect of losing not one but both coordinators in Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn. So the fact that you've gone a full reversal on that and are able to keep Mike McCarthy at the top, so now Kellen Moore gets to focus on play calling continuously, Dan Quinn gets to do the same on defense – that seems to be the best possible situation for some of the young pieces of the core around here. And, Chris, it allows you to do that thing that I think is also valuable in football that we all know, is the self-scout that's a part of the process when you've got everyone in place. There won't be time-consumed learning something new. It'll be, all right, we need to figure out exactly where we went wrong last year because we are going to have, by and large, the same core pieces in place on this team, minus the couple of tweaks that we expect maybe up front on both sides going into the offseason.
Yeah, I think the other thing that this move allows to happen is an evaluation of Mike McCarthy, and it creates a very, very small margin for error with him when it comes to keeping his job, right? We're talking about them competing at a championship level. They got into the playoffs this year. That was a good step, but they still underwhelmed. They still fell short based on what the owner said prior to the playoffs kicking off, which was this is a team that needs to capitalize on having this core of players together and compete for a Super Bowl. And the fact that they got ousted by a wild card team in their home stadium is not something that sits well with the owner, and going into a season where Sean Payton, the white whale for Jerry Jones, so to speak, as far as coaches goes, is going to potentially be out there for a return to the NFL in 2023. So if you're Mike McCarthy, you're coaching for your job, and with both of your coordinators coming back, you're kind of out of excuses why you can't get that done and why this team can't win multiple playoff games. So that's the other part to this that I think makes it an easier decision for Jerry Jones in terms of what he's going to do with his head coach after the 2022 season. By having both coordinators back, you have that continuity. You don't have the excuse of new learning when it comes to your offensive unit or your defensive unit. So the expectations are going to be heightened for the Dallas Cowboys. Not that they're not already lofty, but in terms of there being any excuses for Mike McCarthy as to why he can't get it done, they have all but been eliminated already, and we haven't even gotten to the NFL combine.
No, and Chris, it's about the fine-tuning now for this Cowboys team, right? We know health is certainly going to be a part and was a part of the conversation around this year, especially on offense. But when you look at where they ranked in volume stats last year, they were number one in offensive yards last season. They were tops in scoring average. They struggled in the run game and still were tied for seventh at 4.5 yards per carry. But we saw a lot of that came against a very lackluster NFC East. A lot of that was against lesser opponents. And so now if you're the Cowboys, it's, all right, we got everything back together. We all have that foundation. Chris, you know this. Every year is a new team. In some way, shape, or form, you're getting new in the locker room. But when you've got all that in place, especially in your veteran core, you could start to go over that third and fourth layer of stuff that I think for this Cowboys team is going to be the difference between them finally smashing through and accomplishing some of their goals and then putting up gaudy stats that ultimately don't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, the familiarity with both systems, I think, is only going to bode well, especially with the guys on the defensive side of the ball. That was year one in Dan Quinn's scheme, and you're talking about having a lot of young pieces, guys that are going to be in their second and third year that are essentially cornerstones when you look at that side of the ball. So there's certainly a lot of opportunity for growth with them, but at the same time, you look at that offense, and there's a lot to be desired in terms of that unit being able to pull their weight, especially when you consider some of the cap hits that you have on that side of the ball, especially along the offensive line. So there's going to be a shift in terms of the identity of the Dallas Cowboys moving forward, because this has been a team for the better part of the last decade that's been led by their offense. Now I think they're going to start to be led by their defense, because that was a top 10 unit in terms of scoring last year in football, and I think they're only going to get better. So, Gojo, I would anticipate that subtle shift with the Dallas Cowboys under Mike McCarthy in 2022, but the expectations are going to be the same, which is trying to win a championship for Jerry Jones. There would be no excuse why this team can't compete at that same level and get past the wild card round next year.
Kane Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chris, you mentioned the pressure on Mike McCarthy because we all know the Sean Payton specter is going to be there. But, Chris, I'd say it's probably equally as much for Kellen Moore, right? The beginning of this season through the first month, he was the darling. He was the one that all of a sudden Jerry Jones wasn't going to let out of the building. And by year's end, we were seeing him in a lot different light. That playoff game where he drew and that offense drew criticism from former Cowboy Hall of Famer Troy Aikman, saying they failed to capitalize on the matchup stuff. They were too scheme reliant. They tried to force too much of that in there. All of that rang pretty big for a guy that was supposed to be one of the big-time candidates that went unhired in this past cycle. So it feels like a lot of his future is going to be at stake heading into next year as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of predictability in that Cowboys offense in the second half of the season. It seems like defenses got hip to what they were doing, and they couldn't quite figure out a way to overcome some of the things that were being thrown at them as they moved into the latter portion of their schedule. But the other figure that deserves some criticism and we've got to give a heightened degree of scrutiny to is Dak Prescott. He got the contract behind him. They're paying him $40 million a year, and he certainly didn't look like that in the month of December and in the wild card game. He didn't perform up to that level. So he's another person that we've got to look at and say, if you're truly going to be one of the better quarterbacks in this league, if you're a top 10 quarterback, then you're going to have to produce in those moments, and you're going to have to find a way to elevate the talent around you. Nobody wants to hear that you didn't have Michael Gallup. Nobody wants to hear about the offensive line being banged up or not having the same version of Ezekiel Elliott that you enjoyed during their first three seasons. It's about finding a way to be able to overcome all of the deficiencies that your offense and that your team is dealing with. Because, hell, that's why they're paying you all of that money. So if you can't find a way to do that, then we've got to give Dak his fair share of criticism as well in all of this. It can't just be about Mike McCarthy, and it can't just be about Kellen Moore. Dak deserves some blame in all of this as well.
And that is going to be the group everyone looks at as the Cowboys run this back. Mike McCarthy back as the head coach. Dan Quinn, we knew, coming back as D coordinator. And now, after the Dolphins' job filled their vacancy with Mike McDaniel, Kellen Moore back to the Cowboys as well. Speaking of which, coming up next, Mike McDaniel loves to quote him, 281-330-8004, the Dolphins hit Mike McDaniel up on the low. Is Mike McDaniel about to blow? We'll get to that next year, Candy and Golic Jr.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.